giving you a behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Brett's Insiders with Adam Vingan and Willie Donick. Smashville lives here on 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game, Adam Vingan alongside Willie Donick for the first time in a couple of weeks. Willie, glad to have you back.
It is great to be back, Adam. It is. I can officially say I'm back in the flow of the Central Time Zone.
Good.
Took a couple days, but I'm there.
You had a whirlwind week last week. The Nashville Predators, of course, spent last week in Sweden as part of the NHL's Global Series. The Predators split that series with the Pittsburgh Penguins, winning 2-1 in overtime last Friday and losing 4-0 on Sunday. The Predators return to practice today. They play again on Saturday at Bridgestone Arena against the Colorado Avalanche, and we'll look ahead to the Predator schedule in just a little bit. But before we look ahead, I want to look back for a moment, because as you said, Willie, you spent the week in Stockholm, Sweden. I have not had the pleasure of visiting Stockholm, Sweden, or any country in Scandinavia. I've spent time in Europe. It's always fun to spend time in Europe. But I wanted to take a little behind-the-scenes look at your experience in Stockholm, because the team arrived there last Tuesday and stayed until after the game on Sunday. So give us a little behind-the-scenes flavor, what the trip was like, not only for you, but with the team, and some of the things you saw, some of the things you heard, some of the things you ate. I'd love a little... It's like, is it Anthony Bourdain? A little Anthony Bourdain, right?
Okay, I'll do my best. One note from practice today, I think should be said, is Roman Josi was back full tilt in all of the drills, which bodes well for his return, because, man, have they missed their captain, their best player. So that was noteworthy to throw that out there. As far as Sweden... it was beyond my expectations. I knew it was going to be special. I had the pleasure of going to Prague and Bern. And by the way, Bern might be the best of all of them that I've been to.
That being in Switzerland.
Roman Josi's hometown in Switzerland. Amazing, amazing place. All three are amazing. Stockholm was fantastic. You have to get used to the flow of 3:30, it gets dark. 3:30 in the afternoon. So you think daylight savings time, hey, when you get home from work, you get out of work, it's dark here. How about 3:30? That, you got to make the most of the daylight. But the sun came out after a couple of days of rain, and it was spectacular to walk around. The weather was good, high 30s, mid 40s most of the time. Waterways everywhere in Stockholm. Buildings probably no more than 6 or 7 stories anywhere. But most of the buildings, like you think you've been to a, like my house was built in 1913 in East Nashville. I think that's old. How about buildings that were built in 13-something? You see in Old Town all the time in Stockholm, and the architecture is just so distinct when you walk around. It is, you know, you're in a place that you've never been before. So it was just gorgeous and spectacular.
Philip Forsberg, among the Swedish players on both teams, returning home for this global series. And it really did seem from afar, Willie, that Philip Forsberg received a rock star's welcome from his home country. I saw him arrive for the game in the traditional garb, which I thought was funny. And as I said, there are other Swedish players on the Predators, Adam Willsby, Erik Karlsson on the Pittsburgh Penguins, among others. But tell us what it was like witnessing Philip Forsberg in his element, how much Swedish hockey fans love Philip Forsberg.
It was noticeable around town. You know, Stockholm is, to an extent, an international city. There's plenty of people from all around. But you saw a lot of Forsberg 9, Sweden, Team Sweden jerseys. You could feel the love for hockey the love for Swedish hockey when you walked around downtown. And Philip really embraced the role of ambassador. Erik Karlsson did, I wasn't focused as much on what the Penguins themselves did, but just watching Philip and Adam Willsby, he embraced it as well. And the team really rallied around Adam Willsby. They wanted to make the experience special for him. Philip was sort of leading the entire group on dinners. His wife, Erin, was there. Obviously, the superstar, Felix, who's everywhere, he was front and center, too. It was just really, really fun to watch and to have him have the big moment at the end of the first game. I was really glad for him to have that moment because he deserved it, because it takes it out of you, right? He scores that goal on Friday night. He gets up the next morning with his teammates, and they're hosting an open practice to anybody who wants to come. There were thousands of kids. I mean, thousands there just to watch and be around it. And you would think, hey, guys, I'm tired. I played an overtime game last night. Let's keep this short. He dove right back in there and was taking pictures, signing autographs, doing everything that you would hope somebody that's representing your game does.
Tell us about Avicii Arena, which was renamed a few years ago in honor of the late Swedish DJ. Looked like a great atmosphere for both games on television. What was the arena like? Not just the atmosphere, but the arena itself, how it's laid out, how it looked from your broadcast position. What did you make of Avicii Arena in Stockholm?
Different than anything I've ever seen before or called a game in or been to a concert to. Nothing quite like it. It looks from afar like a big sphere golf ball planet. You know, if you've ever been to Epcot Center,
mm-hmm,
and you've been to the original Spaceship Earth, you know, sort of the centerpiece architecture, it's a bigger version of that. It's just a big ball. And when you walk inside, the stands are, it's like a theater in the end zones where it looks like it's almost like opera seating where you have these sectioned off. There's not as many seats in the end zone, but it's very, very steep, straight up, and you're looking from sort of a balcony in the end zones. And then the stands on either side go very high, steep, vertically. So the fans are almost on top of the rink. It seats just under 1,300. I thought it was a fantastic venue to watch a game because it was so unique in that respect. The other special part that I thought was cool, when they sang, they did the national anthem, Star-Spangled Banner, and then they sang the Swedish national anthem, and everybody sang at the end. I think it's customary to sing, the singer sings about the first three quarters of the song. The last few lines, everybody sings along. It gave you goosebumps, right? I didn't know what the words were or meant or anything, but you could just feel it. Everybody's so prideful of having an NHL game with superstars like Sidney Crosby and players like that right in front of you. They really jumped in.
And the games themselves, the Predators snatched victory from the jaws of defeat on Friday. Philip Forsberg scores a late tying goal in regulation. Steven Stamkos scores in 3-on-3 overtime. Predators win 2-1. The Predators hoped that that win would be a launching pad of sorts to perhaps dig themselves out of the hole that they've dug for themselves to start the season. Unfortunately, that was not the case. The Predators sleepwalked through the first period on Sunday. Fell down 3-0 to the Penguins in the first period. Ultimately, lost 4-0 to the Penguins on Sunday. Two different games. The Predators split the NHL Global Series. They've lost 9 of 11, and it was a disappointing result. You would have hoped that the win on Friday, as I just said, would have perhaps set things in the right direction for the Predators, given them some motivation, but whatever happened on Sunday morning in that first period, the Penguins jumped on them early and the Predators never recovered.
Can we talk about Friday? I'm just kidding.
We can. No.
Well, I do think it was a distinctly two different games. The game on Friday, the Predators end up winning 2-1. I felt like this has been their problem all year long, even in games where they have the edge in terms of chances, quality, analytics, however you want to look at it, it hasn't resulted in the amount of goals that it should and it needs to. But they deserve to win the game. And as we mentioned before, with Phillip having the big moment, and then Steven Stamkos, a guy that's had a lot of tough things happen. He knows the spotlight's on him. He knows this is a league-wide game, and he knows the story of Steven Stamkos this year is, hey, what's going on? How come he hasn't scored more? What's the deal? So for him to have a big overtime winner, I was really happy for him personally. Watching Forsberg answer questions in English and Swedish after the game Friday was a cool moment, and then Stamkos having the spotlight and being able to talk about something he did really well, a big moment, he deserved that, right? Because he has stood in front of the camera and done many interviews, one with somebody you've known, a very good professional writer, Amelie Benjamin. He did the story before the series. Hey, this is my perspective. This is what I'm trying to do to get through the tough times, right? Show an example to my family. Just a really classy, classy thing. All right, so now let's get to Sunday. Some things are really hard to explain. Adam, I don't bet, right? But I anticipated that you would springboard off of that drama and come out with fire and really play a good game. And this is what Andrew Burnett echoed, exactly what my thoughts were. You can live with losing, but let's see, you built something. You had something in your hand there after the game Friday. And to come in and play, especially the first period, they lost the game in the first 10 minutes where they were, there's no other way to put it, they were asleep at the wheel. They were stuck in the mud. They couldn't string together any good plays. It was one of the poorest periods that they've played all year long. And on top of the Penguins playing better, I didn't think the Penguins were that great. They also had a lucky goal, a fluky goal to go in there as well, and you're down 3-0, and you can't fight your way back in the game. So very disappointing not to be able to build off of a really fun, big moment on Friday.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, of course, a lot of the attention lately has been on Andrew Burnett because the Predators have struggled. But we're going to talk about Barry Trotz. And I have decided to take a look at every major transaction that Barry Trotz has made since becoming Predators GM. And I thought it would be instructive to look through those as we attempt to plot a course out of the mess that the Predators have made for themselves over the past couple of seasons. We'll do that coming up next. Adam Bingham and Willie Donick, this is Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan and Willie Donick here with you. The Predators return to action Saturday at Bridgestone Arena against the league-leading Colorado Avalanche. Willie, this is just a remarkable record. The Avalanche's record this season, 13 wins, 1 regulation loss, 5 overtime losses. If there was a scoreigami for NHL records through 19 games, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that would be a scoreigami. 13-1-5. I don't know that to be sure, just a vibe I get, but the Avalanche, 13-1-5 so far this season. 1 regulation loss through the first month of the season. That's absurd.
It is absurd, and it has answered all of the critics of, hey, should they have held on to Mikko Rantanen? Why would you break up the triumvirate of Rantanen, Makar, McKinnon? But that's a problem for Saturday night. To jump back on the ride after this break in the schedule, and you have to play that team.
Yes.
And then the 2-time defending champions on Monday night, got to be ready.
Yes.
Better be ready out of the gate.
The Panthers have struggled this season, 10-8-1 on the season. But we've seen in the past that the Panthers can start slow and ramp it up as the season progresses. So although the Panthers haven't been playing their best hockey to start the season, they are a dangerous team, of course, as Willie notes, the 2-time defending Stanley Cup champion. So that's Saturday against the Avalanche at Bridgestone Arena at 7 o'clock puck drop. You can hear it, as always, right here on 102.5 The Game. So, Willie, the biggest complaint I hear about the Predators, other than why haven't they fired the coach? And by the way, as Willie said, the Predators practiced today. Andrew Burnett ran that practice. So if you're expecting the Predators to make a coaching change right now, I wouldn't hold your breath. But the second question I hear a lot, the second complaint I hear a lot from Predators fans is, how can Andrew Burnett possibly succeed with the roster that Barry Trotz has provided for him? So, obviously, a lot of attention is on Andrew Burnett because it's the easy thing to do in the NHL when a team struggles. You fire the coach. And if the Predators were to make a coaching change, I think it would be justified because of how poorly the team has played since the start of last season. But I want to put that off to the side because that's a conversation we've had quite a bit. I want to look at the moves that Barry Trotz has made as Predators GM because I thought it would be instructive to see how he has sort of plotted this course, where he's done well, maybe where he's done wrong. And I thought it would just be a good exercise just to take a look back. And we do have the benefit of hindsight. So some of those moves that maybe didn't make sense back then make more sense now. I'll give you an example. When the Predators signed Ryan O'Reilly, Gus Nyquist, and Luke Shen on the first day of free agency in 2023, I'll tell you exactly what I thought. I thought it was counterintuitive because at that point, the Predators had sold off assets. They had traded Matthias Ekholm and Nino Niederreiter and Mikhail Granlund and Tanner Jeannot, and I thought they were truly heading into a rebuild. And I thought signing those three players to multi-year contracts ran counter to what I thought the Predators should do. At the time, I thought what they should have done was sign veteran players to one-year deals that you can easily flip at the trade deadline. Like, for example, Nick Foligno or Corey Perry or former Predators forward Jason Zucker. That's what I thought they should have done. But in hindsight, Ryan O'Reilly has worked out for the Predators. Gus Nyquist had a career year, and they were able to flip him to Minnesota for a second-round pick. So that worked out well. So it is really interesting to see all of this written down, Willie. And I'm only looking at the major transactions. So I'm not talking about trades they made on draft day to move up to this round and they traded these picks away to move down. I'm talking about major transactions. So I think the area where a lot of Predators fans are going to focus is July 1st, 2024. The signing of Steven Stamkos, the signing of Jonathan Marchessault, the signing of Brady Shea, and the re-signing of UC Saros. Because those four moves felt like the Predators were prepared to be competitive. Obviously, we've seen how that's gone. It has not gone well. But when you look at Barry Trotz's transactional record as a whole, is there anything that stands out to you? Are there any themes that you're grabbing onto as you look at it?
The number one theme for me that I think should be kept in mind is that none of the moves that he has made have upset the long-term farm system prospect pool that the Predators have had. He has mortgaged 0.0% of the next 3 to 5 years, which from day one he said was the most critical thing in the Predators' outlook. I think you could argue that, and Adam, you tell me if you disagree, by the break in 2020, the shutdown, where the Predators were fighting to get into the playoffs, mm-hmm. eventually they picked up where they left off and they were in the postseason. They would have been if the season stopped in the postseason. But let's say they were a fringe playoff team that year, you know, barely in. That was a drop-off from where they had been, division champion in 2019, President's Trophy 2018, Western Conference champion 2017. That team was, that window was closing by 2020. You could argue that that was really when a rebuild was going to happen. They haven't been as good as they were in those 3 years, 17, 18, 19. Would you agree with that? They yes. have not had a team since then as good as those three teams.
Yes.
Pekka Rinne still at his prime, a rising star in UC Saros, Roman Josi, Philip Forsberg in their prime, those teams. PK Subban, Roman, we get it. So really since then, I think you could probably criticize David Poile of trying to hang on to those teams for another year or two. And then when Barry Trotz took over, it was clear that there had to be some sort of reset. So to me, that should be kept in mind in the backdrop that they've been building the farm system. And David Poile, to his credit, did not mortgage the future. Now, did they draft really well in those years? No. They haven't found the next Roman Josi, the next UC Saros. They didn't draft Philip Forsberg, but the next person through the system that has become a rising, not just a good player, but a great player, a player you build around. They've been missing that for a while. But to their credit, they have been drafting in the first round. They have been compiling a lot of picks. They've got a large pool. So to me, that's still to come, what you get out of that. They're not starting from zero where you're looking ahead. And let's take the Avalanche who are coming in on Saturday. Everything is riding on the group they've got. They're going to keep this window as open as long as they can. And they don't care if they ever pick in the first round the next several years. They're just going to keep reloading like Tampa has been doing the last few years. There's other examples that we can find. And they're just going for it. So the Predators are in a different mode. They've never broken it all the way down. So with that in the backdrop, when you go by person, I think it's fair to say that the initial moves that he made, Barry Trotz, all worked really well, surprisingly well. I don't think anybody thought they'd have 99 points that first year. And then since then, I would say he's not in a hot streak, right? They have not gone well person by person. There's been very few, you know, big hits. If anything, some singles, maybe a couple doubles, not a lot of triples and home runs. Whereas after that first year or so, he was hitting extra base hits a lot with the moves he made.
Let's take a look at some of those first moves, just to give people some context. The first major move he made, Barry Trotz did, as GM, he was still listed as incoming general manager at this time, was trading Ryan Johansson. That's worked out swimmingly. Ryan Johansson barely played in the NHL after that trade. He went to the Avalanche, didn't work out there, traded to the Flyers, never played for the Flyers, had a contract grievance. That made sense. That worked out. The Predators bought out Matt Duchene. Now, I'm sure some people will quibble with that one. To me, that was more of a personality-driven move than an on-ice move, which made sense to me at the time. I know that Matt Duchene has been productive with the Dallas Stars, but I don't have any issues with the Predators buying out Matt Duchene, although they will be carrying his dead cap hit until 2029.
But it goes down considerably after this year. The biggest chunk of that is this year that they're paying now.
Correct.
It's like paying your credit card bill and you pay the big payment. You can say, well, I have payments until 2029, but they're very small payments after this year.
That is true. I mentioned the free agent signings on July 1st, 2023, O'Reilly, Nyquist, and Shen. And then from there, it starts to dip. There was the signing of Tommy Novak. 1 year later, he was traded. We'll get to that trade. But the signing of Tommy Novak. There were the signings of Stamkos, Marchessault, Shea, re-signing UC Saros, which in turn led to the trading of Yaroslav Askarov. But the Predators did get David Edstrom in that trade. The first round pick they received from the Sharks in that deal ended up being Ryker Lee. And Ryker Lee's off to an impressive start with Michigan State. So depending on how Ryker Lee performs, if he makes an impact at the NHL level, that could turn out to be a win. But that's
won't know for 5 years whether what that goes. Because Askarov has had some struggles. And then recently, the last few games, he's looked like they thought. He's got that high upside.
Right.
So we honestly, it really will take that long, I think, before we know really what that trade nets for both teams. Because also you have to factor in, as you mentioned, how does Saros play the next 3, 4, 5 years?
Right. For example, the trade of Luke Shen and Tommy Novak to the Penguins for Michael Bunting in a fourth round pick. The signing of Luke Shen, I feel like I'll have a better grasp of how that deal ultimately worked if the Predators trade Michael Bunting at the deadline and get an asset for him. And depending on what that asset is, if it's a decent asset, I may say, hey, the Luke Shen signing ultimately was a success because they traded him. They received a fourth round pick. Michael Bunting gets traded for, let's say, a second round pick. I'm just throwing a thing out there. And hey, Luke Shen, you had him for what, a year, 2 years, but you got a second round pick and a fourth round pick out of it. Not bad. So there are a lot of these moves that we're not going to know the end result for a little while, but we will pick this up on the other side. We will continue to break down Barry Trotz's major transactions as Predators GM. There's still more to get to, and we'll do that next. Adam Bingen with Willie Donick. This is Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Adam Bingen and Willie Donick here with you. The Predators return to action on Saturday against the league-leading Colorado Avalanche. That is a 7 o'clock puck drop. You can hear that game right here on 102.5 The Game. So tonight, we are taking a look back at Barry Trotz's major transactions as Predators GM to get a sense of his plan and whether it's coming to fruition or could come to fruition, because a lot of the attention has been on Andrew Burnett. But let's turn our attention towards Barry Trotz. So we left off, Willie, with the Yaroslav Askarov trade in August of 2024. And as we said, since those first few moves that he made, trading Ryan Johansson, buying out Matt Duchene, signing Ryan O'Reilly, Gus Nyquist, and Luke Shen, he hasn't had as many hits as he did at the start. There were three interesting moves in November of 2024. He waived Dante Fabro, he traded Philip Tomasino, and he flipped Scott Wedgwood for Eustace Annunen. Dante Fabro has turned into a reliable defenseman for the Columbus Blue Jackets. He is getting opportunities in Columbus that he wasn't getting here. And it's led Predators fans to wonder, could he have received those opportunities here? I would argue that he did receive those opportunities here and didn't always make the most of them. So good for Dante Fabro. He's become an important part of that Blue Jackets blue line. I'm not sure it was ever going to happen here. It's reminiscent. You tell me if you agree with this, Willie. Dante Fabro is sort of reminiscent of Kevin Fiala. Kevin Fiala's had some great seasons since leaving Nashville with Minnesota and Los Angeles. But I covered those teams, and I never thought that Kevin Fiala would turn into what we saw in Minnesota and LA here. I just thought he was young. He needed to grow up a little bit. I just don't think he was going to be the Kevin Fiala that put up big numbers elsewhere here. Would you agree with that? With Dante Fabro?
I always thought that Kevin Fiala was a high-ceiling guy. And I thought that at the time of the Kevin Fiala for Mikhail Granlund trade, that it was a team trying to win right then. And they just ran out of patience with Kevin Fiala, who has become, I think, what I always thought he would be, a very prolific but mercurial star who you have to ride the ups and downs in the waves of him. And there are a lot of examples like that around the league of players like that. You just have to live with the rough times and know that at the end of the year, you're going to have some pretty spectacular stuff. Granlund, unfortunately, when the Predators had him, he went through some ups and downs personally, which affected his best strengths. When you see him, like he's got a lot of big assets. You didn't see him all the time when he was with the Predators. You had glimpses of it. And he's rebounded well in the last couple of years since he's left the Predators and I think gotten himself into a better place in his life. Dante Fabro, to me, was never, even though he was a first-round pick like Fiala, roughly in the same part of the first round, I think Fabro has always been a good, steady NHL defenseman. He'll probably play for another 5 or 10 years, I would say. He's just one of those guys. But he's not spectacular. Kevin Fiala can give you the spectacular. Would you agree?
Yes.
Have you ever said spectacular next to Dante Fabro?
No.
He's just a nice NHL player. And unfortunately for Fabro, he got compared to Shea Weber, Roman Josi, Ryan Suter, Dan Hamhuis, all of the guys that the Predators are probably most known for around the league, drafting defensemen. And Fabro had such a quick start. He dove right into the NHL after college and made a very good impression, but he never really built on it. I think the best hockey ever played probably was last year in Columbus, but they didn't make the playoffs. He was playing with Zach Werenski. This year, I think he looks more like he has most of his career. Fair to say?
Yeah.
But I think the stinging part is he was a first round pick. He played for the Predators for a long time. They invested a lot of time and energy, and they didn't get anything for him as an asset in return. That's the one thing that I think you knock Barry Trotz on for not getting anything back for him. But are they losing now, or did they lose last year because they lost Dante Fabbro? No.
The one thing that stands out to me about the Predators, and Barry Trotz has mentioned this multiple times, the Predators have the older group, obviously. Barry Trotz is hopeful that he has the youngest group. Your Brady Martins, your Riker Lees, the top prospects, Tanner Molendijk, the prospects who are not yet ready for prime time. But there's no middle group. The Predators do not have that group of early to mid 20-somethings who can help you win now while the youngest group is cooking. And the Dallas Stars, for example, the Dallas Stars are a team that are always brought up when it comes to drafting and developing. And you look at the Stars roster. They've got the old heads, Jamie Benn, Matt Duchene, Tyler Seguin, right? They've got some younger players on the way. But they also have that middle group. Jason Robertson is 26. Miro Heiskanen is 26. Jay Gottinger is 27. And that younger group, Wyatt Johnston, is 22. Thomas Harley is 24. Maverick Bourque is 24. So the Stars have the old group that's going to be phased out in a little bit. They've got that middle group. Robertson, Hintz, Ottinger, Rantanen, and they're in the later half of the 20s. 26, 27, 28, 29. But the Stars also have Johnston and Harley, who, when Ben and Sagan and Duchene move on and Rantanen and Hintz get older, you've got Johnston and Harley, one up front, one on the back end, presumably leading the charge. The Predators do not have that middle group. And some of that has to do with the drafting that was not done by Barry Trotz, that was done by David Poile. Philip Tomasino was another move on this list. Philip Tomasino just got waived by the Pittsburgh Penguins. Dante Fabbro, no longer here. Eli Tolvanen, no longer here. Yaroslav Askarov, traded. That's where that middle group would have come from. That's out of Barry Trotz's hands. But that is really the biggest problem with the Predators. There's not that middle group of 24, 25, 26-year-old difference makers that can keep the train moving while the 21, 22, and 23-year-olds develop.
Yeah, and I think if you go back and look at when they did have that type of roster, how good they were. When they had, let's take 2015 through 2019, mm-hmm. you know.
Philip Forsberg was young, Roman Josi, right. Ryan Ellis, Matias Ekholm.
Yes, you had those guys who were young. You had Shea Weber, who was a little bit older than P.K. Subban, who was a little bit older. Pekka Rinne, a little bit
Neal
older.
In that James middle Neal. Group.
Good one.
Yep.
Yeah, and you had guys like Craig Smith, who
right.
were just
Colin
rock
Wilson.
Solid. Colin Wilson, yes, even though he was a higher first-round pick that maybe did not bloom quite that, he still was a very good NHL player at his best, who wasn't expected to carry the team, but he was a contributor on winning teams. So you're right. They're lacking in that area right now. I guess the question I have, and I'll ask it to you, Adam, was this sort of inevitably going to happen? Like, Barry Trotz made a lot of moves where he has said to us repeatedly, I was trying to get more of those guys. I was trying to get my roster a little bit younger. Trading Alex Carrier for Justin Barron. Trading Wedgewood for Onanen. There's another example or two in there where he wanted to get a little bit younger. He hasn't gotten any sort of diamonds in a rough in there. So some of that was just the way it was unfolding. You just mentioned the series of draft picks that didn't turn into the next Ryan Ellis or Matthias Ekholm, guys like that, they've come up empty there. It's not all of Barry Trotz's doing. It was an attempt to try to stem the tide. So they're in that tweener period of some older veterans that they signed, Stamkos, Marchessault, etc., and this young group that we really don't know what they have yet, with Matt Wood, who is probably right now the guy that's given them a little bit of hope, and then other guys that we haven't even seen in Nashville yet for the most part. We don't know what that group is going to be. But to his credit, like the guys that he's moved on from, because Tolvanen was the one that turned into a very good player. That was before Barry Trotz. That was on David Poile's watch. But even Fabro, he's really the same player. He had a really good career year last year, which he has not, to this point, built on this year. He looks like a good, steady defenseman, which they knew what they had. And then another example of trying to get younger was Nick Hague, right? And that's another one that has not worked out well. They traded two guys that were older to try to get younger. Hague is at the beginning stages here. They need more from Nick Hague, who was hurt. But he has not looked like the answer yet. He's in that age gap that you're talking about, though. He's in that mid-20s where you hope he can be around for a while and be a solid piece.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, we're going to wrap up the show with a heartwarming discussion involving our very own Willie Donick. I saw something today that made me smile, and we need to smile more. So we will discuss that coming up next. Adam Bingham and Willie Donick. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5 The Game. Adam Bingham and Willie Donick here with you. The Predators return to action on Saturday against the league-leading Colorado Avalanche. Of course, you can hear that game right here on 102.5 The Game. The Predators then host the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions, Florida Panthers, on Monday before two road games sandwiching Thanksgiving, Wednesday in Detroit, Friday in Chicago. And man, Connor Bedard, another hat trick last night. The Blackhawks are fun to watch, which is not something I've said in recent years. So that'll be an interesting game. Connor Bedard looks awesome so far this season. And here's what I love, Willie, looking at the top scorers in the NHL. Nathan MacKinnon, 33 points. Macklin Celebrini and Connor McDavid, 30 points. Connor Bedard, 29 points. It's awesome to see two young players up there, but Connor Bedard, he has hit another level this season, so that'll be tough for the Predators next week, but I'm looking forward to that game because the Blackhawks, as I said, they've been a tough watch for several years. They're fun to watch now.
They're starting to get some traction after all the time they put in with the full break it down all yes. The way to the bottom. And so, yeah, it's I don't think the Predator fans are too happy to see them doing well, but it is around the league, you've been wondering how long would it take before you started to see some turning of the corner there. It does look like they're making progress.
So I want to end the show on a heartwarming note because we need more love in our lives. We need to feel happy. There isn't a lot to feel happy about, not just about the Predators, but most local teams in Nashville. So today at practice, I saw that UC Soros was sporting a special Hockey Fights Cancer mask. And on that mask were four members of the Predators family who have been affected by cancer. Craig Partner Baugh, the beloved dressing room attendant. I'm sure many of you have either met or heard of Partner. Wonderful man. Absolute legend. You've definitely heard him because he's loud. He's very loud. But just a lovely man. Sheila Crisp.
Another legend.
Lexi Rogers. And in my humble opinion, the biggest legend of them all, Aaron Donick. Aaron Donick featured on this mask by UC Soros. I know, Willie, that you were told about this beforehand, but I saw the mask. I saw the portrait of Aaron on the mask. I thought it was a lovely, lovely tribute by UC Soros.
It speaks a lot about UC Soros, the person. He's a quiet guy, right? I met UC when he was 20 years old. Like He's been around that long now. It's crazy to think. He's now 30.
His NHL debut 10 years ago at this point, right?
It would have been around this time in 2015. You're right. And he was only up for the one game.
Right.
And then came back the next year as the backup and built obviously a four-time All-Star, four-time top six Vezina, all of that. But the person, Juuse Saros, it's hard to get to know him. You know, he doesn't talk about himself. He's done so many first-star interviews in front of the crowd, and he's a little bit like Shea Weber in that he would rather talk about anything else except for his own personal performance.
He's like that. You see the commercial that he did with Ryan O'Reilly where he just goes, no goals.
Yeah.
That's kind of Juuse Saros when
you chat
with him.
That was a comfortable role for him than, hey, I'm really good. Hey, I did all of these things.
He does not take after his predecessor in that way. Pekka-Rinne.
Yes.
Pekka
gives you
interview.
That, aw, shucks.
Yes.
It's my teammate, but he's much more of a personality.
Yes.
He's outward. He has more conversational stuff. But Juuse's heart, you can't say enough about. I got a text from him at the end of the summer, but it was before training camp started. And, you know, we had been through a lot. Our family, needless to say, in the summer, as I've shared on the air. But it says, Willie, this is Juuse. I don't have his number on my phone. So when I see that, I'm like, well, I don't know very many Juuses. I think this might be Juuse Saros.
Let me flip through my Rolodex and see how many Juuses I know. Just one.
And it was such a nice message. He was like, this is what I'm thinking about doing. Are you okay with this? Talk to your family. And of course, it took me 2 minutes. The first thing I did was text my two kids, Evie and Mahoney. And I was like, this is what Juuse wants to do. They were blown away. So I cannot say enough about Juuse the person. And of course, Lexi Rogers, the daughter of Pete Rogers, the equipment director that has been with the team for all of these years. And Lexi is doing well right now. Knock on wood. She is really progressing well. I love hearing that. Sheila and Aaron, so tight through their fights. And of course, what can you say about partner Baugh, the ever-present one? His story's been well told. So Juuse will be representing these four faces on his helmet. It was all his idea. He thought about this and wanted to make that gesture. He'll be wearing the helmet not only in the warm-up, but he'll be wearing it during the game on Saturday. So this will be unlike any broadcast that I've ever done, Adam. I can't promise how I'm going to sound, how my emotions are going to go. Just watching him at practice today wear the helmet for the first time, I got goosebumps. Doing it. I had a great conversation with Pete Rogers, who was the one that coordinates everything. Of course, it's personal for him, but he's the guy that it's his job anyway. Anybody wanting to change their mask or change their equipment, they go through him. So he's been through this process of getting the pictures of everybody, getting the artwork, consulting with Juuse on how he wants it to look, how he wants it to feel, talking with the league on how this works. And they've had gung-ho support from the NHL. So it's going to be a special night. As you mentioned, the Predators will be the underdog. They're playing the team that might be playing the best in hockey. So it's ripe for drama. So I'm hoping for emotions. I can count on emotions being high. Hockey Fights Cancer is always a special night, going back way before I had the personal involvement with everything. But it's probably going to be unlike anything I've ever experienced before. But I want to thank Juuse and the Predator family for rallying around, what's going on.
Just a wonderful tribute from Juuse Saros. And I've known Juuse Saros since his career began. And you described him to a T. Not easy to get a lot out of Juuse Saros. I've interviewed him countless times. He doesn't fill up your notebook or your recorder the same way Pekka-Rinne did. But just a lovely man with a huge heart. We miss Aaron every day. So I saw that and I just thought that is so nice. So I thought that would be a touching, heartwarming way to end the show. The Predators will be back on the ice Saturday against the league-leading Colorado Avalanche. Of course, you can hear that call right here on 102.5 The Game as well as on FanDuel Sports Network with Willie Donick, Chris Mason, and the rest of the crew. For Willie Donick, I'm Adam Vingan. Thank you for listening to Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game.